Maurice Misselowski, live from Melbourne. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Good to be back.
Lovely. Well, we had a holiday here yesterday. I think it's one that you guys don't have. And you, of course, were off because it was Anzac Day last week. Do you tend to do much on a day like that? Because you don't sort of want to go round yee-haw, do you, I suppose?
No, we actually had a really interesting trip into the country on a train.
Oh, okay.
We went away for the day. It was actually really very, very nice.
Good on you. Well, it's lovely to be back on the brew with you, Maurice Misselowski. We are going to be talking about something new today. Well, all yours. What is it?
Well, relatively new. It's a dawn of a new generation. You know, we've talked before about generation baby boomers and about Gen X's and Y's and Z's, and nobody knows what the letters stand for or what the exact years are. But what they do is they try and group a whole lot of humans that are born around the same sort of time. And they say because they're born around the same sort of time, they most likely will have a lot of similarities in what is important to them, you know, the technology that impacts on them, the way they're going to live, how long they're going to live. So we kind of try and average out a whole group of people by saying that type of thing.
I've got a little list in front of me that might help, because there's some things in here that we probably might not have heard of. So apparently the greatest generation, 1901 to 27, and the silent generation, 28 to 45. Now, do you know much about that one? That's an interesting title.
Yeah, both of them. So the silent generation, which was the latter one that was up until World War II, was a generation post-World War I. I mean, obviously, they were brought up in a time of depression. They were called the silent generation because they really didn't have much voice at all.
That's exactly what I wondered. Yeah.
Yeah, the world was in turmoil. There really wasn't a lot of stuff that was happening. I mean, it was about making sure there was food on table, that everything that needed to be done could be done. And that's why they were called silent. We also had the domination of a whole lot of politics around that time. Not much for citizens to be said or done or heard of. And that's why they were called the silent. They did what they had to do, didn't make much fuss and went on with it.
Yeah, and the one everybody's heard of, we call them the boomers. It was the baby boom generation from 46 to 64. Well, that one does what it says on the tin. It's pretty obvious. Post-war.
And follows on. As most generations do, they're obviously a response to the previous generation. So baby boomers or boomers, I think it's only Australia that actually calls them baby boomers. They are boomers around the world. Yeah. Basically 46, and nobody ever knows. You know, nobody puts a line in the sand and says it's absolutely. No, it's somewhere around 64. 1964 is when it stopped.
It's another thing where we just like to categorise stuff because it makes us feel better.
Yeah, we do. And that's a post-World War II response. And again, we can read into that after World War II, of course, the first decade or so wasn't terribly easy. But after that, people began to have new careers, new prosperity, especially in Australia. It was a time of greatness. In other words, lots of people had lots of things. People bought houses, had lots of food, had jobs, had all that kind of stuff, and made a relatively good living, had relatively good lives. That's why they're called the boomers, because it was the first generation to have real wealth in comparison to previous generations around the world. And access to things, access to education, to food, to agriculture, to all sorts of things that might be necessary to life.
So is the title pertinent to when they grow up? Because obviously the next one is the millennial generation, and according to the list I have, 1981 to 96.
Yeah, so they're the baby boomer children. They are brought up again in a time of affluence, not knowing anything different. They are totally different from any previous generation because they were the first not to never hear the word no. And that's often how they're described, that everything they wanted within reason was available to them. I'm not saying they were spoiled, although we can say that, but I'm saying they live in a world where it was relatively easy still to find a job or a career, relatively easy to get on, to have all the things that might be necessary.
Yeah.
And they have a different response to. They're kind of the first generation to play with technology in a big way.
Right.
Now, they weren't born into it, but a lot of their lives were influenced by it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they have a very different mindset too, and there's a whole lot of demographics, a whole lot of different thoughts about when they got married and, you know, what their schooling did. They kind of stayed in school a lot longer. They were the first generation that were expected to stay at school for as long as possible in most societies around the world, because that was possible for them.
And I think I come from the smuggest generation because, you know, on those memes that say, if you were a kid in the 80s, blah, 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 that's, of course, Generation X. Apparently the last band played in the street with dirt and stuff.
I haven't heard it described that way, but you're absolutely right. I mean, what we talk about there is, again, another response. The children that were born of that era were born into absolute wealth. They never heard the word no. Again, these are average societal stuff. But what they lived in was a world where technology was becoming really ordinary, not what we have today, necessarily mobile phones, at the early stages of their life, but certainly the mouse, the computer, the PC being in existence, the internet being there. They weren't born into the internet, but by the time they got into society, got into school, the internet was kind of around for them.
It's an interesting thing, Maurice, because a lot of people, I mean, these bands of years are quite broad, really, aren't they?
But oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think possibly Gen Xers, late 60s people, they were born into a period of invention? I'm sure a lot of people listening now who are 40-something, 50, whatever, they remember at school when there was a BBC computer or the Sinclair ZX81 was a big thing.
Sinclair.
So
yeah,
they were at the front of a lot of this stuff.
Well, it was ordinary for them, meaning that absolutely, as you've said, they saw it around them in society. Remember, this was the time when people were protesting for democracy and burning bras, and we were seeing television for the first time in most homes. And cinema was becoming big. So there were lots of influences, and they were global influences too, which was different from previous generations. They could access what was happening around the world, maybe not to the extent, of course, that we're used to on the internet, but still in a very, very different way from previous generations.
Well, let's give it a bit of fairness here. So Generation X's idea of fun was probably a bit different to those who followed them. I mean, do you think Generation X's had less of a moral compass? They nicked things. It was always jolly good fun to knock off a cigarette machine or pinch a motorbike. Forget the fact that you were going to probably kill yourself. But then we have all the moral right after that, and good when it comes to nicking motorbikes.
I don't know if the stats hold up on the motorbike thing, but let's go with that one. But, you know, what I love out of that is it doesn't matter what generation you belong to. The previous generation thinks you're going to hell in a handbasket.
All right, Maurice, let's move on to the bunch that you want to talk about today. And why do you want to mention the Gen Talus?
Well, we touched on this a few years ago, and I've been talking about it on and off for the last 3 years. I've had this hankering, this trying to understand thing about whether children born in the COVID era are going to have any long-term issues, you know, that demographic thing of banding people together.
Especially those who were born, you know, born and they had to wear masks for their...
Yeah, you know. Well, not only wear masks, but literally born, hadn't seen another child. And we're not being dramatic because it's so recent to us. You know, a great number of children, there were 755,265, to be exact, children that were born in Australia during that period. And that period, I've kind of taken it up to the end of last year, early this year, and there are 140 million globally. In Hong Kong, there are 112,500 children born the same period.
Well done.
So you have a whole lot of children that were born. And, of course, you know, we can't remember back to our, you know, year one, year two, year three, but it's amazing how psychologically that changes us as we move down the years. My thought around that was, and other people's thoughts as well, was, you know, how will the period that they were born into influence them for the rest of their lives? They didn't see other children. Many of them did not see another child for another, you know, 2 or 3 years in any meaningful way of having play groups or going down to the park or doing things that most kids have done throughout the millenniums. They just weren't allowed to. And the other thing, which is really significant, that, and something that I've kind of gone backwards to go forwards on, you talked about the silent generation, 1924 to 50.
Who had far more to worry about than getting likes, right?
But... Oh, absolutely. Had no idea what that meant at all. You know, if they were lucky, if they could find a boyfriend or a girlfriend and like them, and that was about the total sum of it.
Yeah.
But what the similarity between this new generation born during COVID and the silent generation is they were the only generations over the last couple of hundred years that were born in a period of uncertainty.
I wonder how many people have sat down and said to themselves, Maurice, if I could be born in a perfect year to avoid any conflict and warfare. I don't know if you could, actually.
No, conflict and warfare, absolutely not. But I do think the 60s and 70s were the golden eras for a whole lot of reasons. But that doesn't mean anybody not born in those eras were different. But 60s and 70s, we talked about before, because all things were possible and there was just a huge upside. Anything seemed to be possible. But these children, I believe, will have full, robust lives. They'll probably live to 100, and, you know, 100 or 120. So there's nothing untoward. But psychologically, we are all... we are all born into a period of time, and we think on those things as we move through life. Yeah. We often reflect on them, even if we're not quite sure why or how.
I like the way Morris has written an article here, which I do urge you to read. How do people find it?
MorrisFuturist.com and into the blog.
Yay. So, you know, if you imagine you're a left-wing or a right-wing newspaper, and how would you headline these things? So Generation B will grow up in a world that is more interconnected and digitally savvy than any previous generation. Other newspaper, sociopaths on the rise. So both sides of the coin.
Yeah, but again, no surprise at all that this generation was absolutely born into technology. Nothing existed before it. But the big difference is that in their short period of lives, especially the first three years, was technology was all that existed. Yeah. These kids were actually brought up in front of a screen. They were brought
technology
up.
Technology was toys. Is toys, isn't it?
Because there was nothing else. I mean, even with the best of intent, it was hard, apart from, you know, walking up and down a couple of blocks or whatever you were allowed to do and whatever, you know, the government said you could do. Kids primarily were entertained by technology, and so were their parents and everyone else around them. So there's this huge mindset from day one of being comfortable with a PC or PC, they wouldn't even know what that is, with a phone or an iPad or whatever else it is that they're using around them. Just an immediate affinity with it.
All right, then. So let's go back for another comparison here, because it's not all Mickey take fodder for me. You go down Morris's article a little bit. He says Generation B will be more environmentally conscious than any previous generation. So we're Gen X's tree killers. I'm just giving you.
Is there an in between, or is that neither or?
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't mind if a tree got cut down. Let's say that.
Not so much. Not so much. As long as the tree ended up in some pretty, you know, fashion of a table or a chair.
So that's a good
useful
thing, Morris. I mean, what we have now.
Many people would say it absolutely is. And again, we take into that right now on the planet, over the last 2 or 3 years especially, there has been a huge environmental shift towards making sure that we take better care of this planet.
Yeah.
Generation B is brought up in the wave of this. They've heard nothing else but this. Again, this is general, this is average, this is all this kind of thing. Yeah. But as a society, we are feeding them this message ad infinitum, that the world is about to cease, that we as individuals have to do our bit. We have to save, we have to do,
and that's good.
We have to be careful.
Yeah.
So it's definitely going to play in their conscience as they grow through.
And going down one more, there's a very important paragraph that Morris calls health, increased focus on mental health and well-being. Now, I'm generalising here, but imagine if you were a little kid in 1972 and you didn't fit in the classroom and you made lots of noise and you couldn't concentrate, you were a naughty boy. You may have been diagnosed with ADD 20 years later and been treated for it.
Yeah. And again, I mean, as you said absolutely rightly, in the classroom, not just as a naughty boy, but you would have been seen as an absolute outsider.
Yeah, indeed.
And you would not
they
have been
wouldn't
allowed
have thought there was a reason, though. That's what I mean, yeah.
No. I mean, you would have been ashamed. Your parents would have been ashamed. You know, 15 generations back would have been ashamed. That's not because they had to be, but because that's how society and culture saw it. Mm-hmm. Today, thankfully, I think that we're a little bit more advanced. Not all the way there yet, but we're a little bit more advanced. The children can now say that, you know, they don't actually feel that they are coping or that they might feel something's wrong with them. But again, remember that in this period that they were born, mental health was absolutely important. We were talking about it every day. We were being urged to look after our own mental health.
And the kids in the 70s were taking the mickey out of people.
Yeah, but it was an ordinary conversation to have, which is a good thing.
It is.
So they have been brought up in a period where from day one they have heard people say, I don't feel well. Not just talking about their body, they're talking about their mind.
Has the key been to give it a being, give it titles, not really nasty ones that the kids in the 70s would have used, but to give certain things, and it makes them exist, right?
It does, and as humans, we need to label things. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If we talk about a group of kids and don't give them the label, it's hard for us to imagine to get excited for governments to begin to put policy in place. You kind of rail them all up, give them a name, and people can start to work on the thoughts of what they have. For me, this list is very much that like that. When I talk to my clients about this, I'm not for a moment saying that, you know, these 755,000 children are going to be the bee's knees or, you know, the most important thing. Really what I'm saying is that the impact of the last 2 or 3 years another way of looking at it is through the children that were born in that period. Mm. You know, what will they have never seen anything else but? In other words, what's only happened in their time period? Mm. And from that, we actually can see the influences that you and I are having, who are not of those generations, but much older generations.
That makes sense. Well, I was about to give you one last question, which was along the lines of, well, what future for the Gen Bers? But you summed it up beautifully near the end of your article. It says, Gen B will also share a trait with their silent generation ancestors. They were both born in areas of uncertainty, scarcity, and with a legacy psychological scars of a world less certain. Pretty much sums it all up, but just tell me why.
Thank you. Because what we have there is a generation that was born in a time period that was really uneasy and uncomfortable. We were uncertain about what the world was going to be. We made a lot of changes. I know that we're bending back and things, you know, are going back a little bit, but we made a lot of changes to what we thought the world would be.
Yeah.
For them, immediately, we changed education, and I think that will see the first impact that they have. It became partly remote, partly physical, partly digital, you know, all sorts of bits and pieces. We changed curriculum. We've changed the health system. We've changed mental health, for instance. We've talked about that already. Social responsibility. These things will have immediate impacts. They won't know it yet because they're too young.
Yeah.
But certainly the people around them and the way we treat them, the things we give them, the things we tell them are important, will all be impacted just by the last 2 or 3 years. Hasn't happened before.
No.
Normally it takes generations of change for us to influence children in the way we rear them.
Well, everything goes much quicker these days, doesn't it? You get on to talking about a human first future strategy, but surely if everybody's so engrossed in their satellite tech bubbles, how can we be human first?
I actually think there is a great pushback to being human first. The technology is really, I mean, even though it's ambient, it's everywhere around and we're kind of taking it for granted. I think that's the point. We're taking it for granted and we're pushing back now to humanity. In this conversation we've had over the last couple of months around artificial intelligence, all the boffins and technologists and the people that innovated and invented it have all come out and said, even though this thing exists and it might be great, let's take a human-first approach to it. So there is this, I'm sensing this pushback now to kind of being more human.
Is that possible? Because we often talk about the point of no return.
I hope so. I truly hope it is. I hope that as humans we can learn to use these things as tools, like screwdrivers, hammers, or whatever else, and we can get on with doing what we do, which is rearing, you know, having really great Generation Bs and all the generations that come after them.
Yep. Well, there it is, Morris. Tell me how you sort of put this together. What was the deal? Did it take you a while? Was it lots of thought? Was it what ifs? And why did you do it, by the way? It's really interesting.
So for me, this was a thought piece, and I put these out regularly, something that, you know, I think might impact on a broader range of clients, industries, and the way we should think. It's been a continual research over the last 2 or 3 years for some of it. And can I tell you, I used some artificial intelligence.
Brilliant.
In this as well, not just mine. I actually pumped it into one of the storytelling artificial intelligence engines and allowed it to craft a basic story, which I thought was interesting. Might come to that another week, which it's the first time I've done a major article.
Did you fess up, Morris? I don't see any fessing up going in this article.
No, because I wrote it. I plagiarised it wonderfully.
Mate, that was really awesome. MorrisFuturist.com and then /gen-B, gen/B. That should get us there, shouldn't it?
It should. Otherwise, it's Morris Futurist. Go straight to the blog.
Thank you, mate. Talk to you next week, all the way from St Kilda in Melbourne. That is.